Okay. Who doesn't have a white ticket before I get started?
Can you tell I'm her sponsor?
Hi, everybody. I'm Lida, and I'm an alcoholic. And I love this meeting. This is my favorite place to be. I don't miss Mondays unless I'm sick or in the hospital, you know. And I'm glad everybody was here tonight to celebrate our anniversary. It's 11 years this month. And it just happened that I got the chance to lead, which to me is a big honor because I started coming to this meeting 11 years ago. I had 6 months sobriety, and my sponsor says this will give you something to do. Be secretary. Okay, so I've been secretary since. But you know what? We had days when there was just me and Big Ed. I don't know if any of you guys know Big Ed. Him and I'd be sitting out there on 26th across from Dairy Queen, go get a Dairy Queen, waiting for people to come up to the meeting, and him and I would read the readings, you know. And it was very rewarding, very rewarding. And this, it took a little while to get this many people. We had days that we only had one or two. We had 10. We had 20 people at 12th Street sitting on each other's laps on the floor. But it was a meeting, and it was enjoyable. But let's start. I better qualify, I guess. Well, someday when I grow up, I'm going to be a midget. But right now, I'm working on sobriety, and that's the most important thing in my life right now. I came from a large family. I'm the oldest of 14. I have 8 brothers and 5 sisters. My youngest sister, real true blood sister, died about 4 years ago. And thank God I was in the program because it would have really, I really would have went haywire. And the program saved my life. My first stepfather was a very cruel alcoholic. He was full-blown alcoholic, and he would beat us kids and never even know, get up the next day and never even know why we had bruises, why we were all, you know, broken fingers and stuff from getting beaten. And he would always ask us, what did you do, go play somewhere where you shouldn't have been playing or something like that? He never knew that he was doing it. Now I understand. Then I didn't. I was a child, you know. He was very cruel in many ways. when I was 17, I left home and literally ran. I took the first bus I could, and I headed for Pennsylvania. Didn't have no clue where I was going, what I was going to do. I stayed with my first stepfather's sister, which she was a little Polish lady and just as mean as her brother, but at least she wasn't an alcoholic and she wasn't cruel. She was just a very, very strict person. What, are we not speaking loud enough? Nobody can hear me?
My buddy over there can't hear you.
Which one? Hi, buddy. How you doing? And I left home and I went and lived with my aunt, and I started working at General Electric, and I worked there for 10 years, and in that 10-year span, I met my husband, had 3 children, you know, and all in that time, I learned how to drink, which was a lot of fun. I learned that real fast. That was the easiest thing I learned. My boyfriend at the time, which ended up being my husband, so the first time, how we met is probably how I should say, I kept seeing him in the parking lot, and he was a cutie. I wanted to meet him. He was Burt Reynolds and Sean Connery mixed together. Looks, honest to God. And I was in love with both. So I'm going to get this guy, you know. So, and back then in the 60s, I wore the stirrup black stretch pants, you know, and the black go-go boots and the black leather jacket, you know, the whole 9 yards. So one day I was running. It's winter time, and I'm running out to catch, because I got to catch the bus to get home. And I thought, oh, wow, I think if I run into him, I'll get to meet him, you know. And so I had that plan, but his father had the same plan. His father pushed him just as I went to run into him, and I fell in a snowdrift because I missed him. So, needless to say, that was the end of that romance. I took off like a jet. I was so embarrassed. It was ridiculous. I got on the bus, went home. About 2 weeks later, my girlfriend comes in to work, and she says, "Hey, Lyda, do you want to go on a blind date?" And I, right, this guy must be a real dog. You know, they got to set him up with me, you know. So I says, "All right." She says, "He's a nice, clean-cut Catholic, you know. He went to a Catholic school, you know, and all this good stuff going on, you know." And I says, "All right, he can't be all that bad." So I'm thinking, Catholic, okay. I got a little plaid skirt and a little white blouse and a little bow tie, and I'm all dressed ready to go out on my date, my blind date. And he comes to the door. I opened the door, and it was the guy. Wham! I slammed the door, ran upstairs, put on my tight jeans, my black leather jacket, came downstairs, you know. And, I mean, I was dressing fast. And I got downstairs, and he goes, "Who was that?" And I said, "Oh, that was my sister." My sister didn't live there. She lived in Ohio. You know, I was the only one there. And I says, "She's bashful." I says, well, she was kind of. She was a little more bashful than I was. I was bashful at that time, but I grew out of that real fast. That's my sponsor, yeah. we went on our first date to Kelly's, you know. Well, on the way, he's telling me about the straw roof and the arrows in the wall and the dirt floor, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, what are they taking me a dump like that for, you know? I don't even think I'm going to like it, you know. Well, I discovered I liked Kelly's, you know. I got my first two beers, and I was under the table, and I was squashed. And I never talked so much. They couldn't shut me up. That's one of those, I got a little talkative, over-talkative. And so he takes me home, and a week later he calls me up and asks for another date. Well, you know, I'm thinking, holy, I didn't think this guy would ever come back, you know. Especially as, you know, practically had to drag me out of the car and send me into my aunt's house, you know. I was totally gone. So we went out, and this time we went to Ripley Inn, you know, because I'm 19, you know, not old enough to drink, really. And continued with the two-beer limit and got drunk and got my date back home again. No, my date got me back home again. And so we went out weekends like that for about a year, and he asked me to marry him. And so we got engaged. It was funny how he did it. We were at the Wattsburg Fair, and I wanted a quarter. I didn't have a quarter. I says, "Could I have a quarter?" And he says, "Yeah, if you don't give it back." And I said, "I'm not going to give it back. I'm going to spend it, you know?" And so I opened my hand, and he put the engagement ring in my hand, and that's how we got engaged. It was kind of a romantic type thing. And it was really neat. Oh, Marty. So, you know, we got engaged, and we went through the whole, you know, Catholic thing, getting ready for the Catholic wedding and everything. Well, his dad had died, or his grandfather had died, like in February. And they said because we'd already had the plans made for the wedding and everything that we didn't have to cancel our wedding, you know, because of the funeral and everything going on, you know. So we continued. We got married and that. And when we got married, and 6 months after we got married, we bought our first home. And so we had this, it was Christmas Eve, and we had moved into the house on Christmas Eve. And we had a little tiny Christmas tree like this. And I wrote Tom a little letter because I kind of sort of found out I was pregnant. And he kind of sort of wasn't too happy. So I wrote him a little letter, and I stuck it under the tree, and I said, "That's all I can give you for Christmas." And he says, "Oh, money, huh?" And I says, "No, but I have a feeling you're going to need it, you know." And he was right. So he reads the letter, and he says, "No, we agreed. 6 years, 5, 6 years before we have kids." I said, "Well, you know, something went wrong there. You know, I didn't have nothing to do with it. It must be all your fault, you know." And So anyway, so about August, we were married June. August the following year, we had our first son. Well, when I got pregnant, I was one of those bloom men. 3 months along, I looked like I was 6 months, so everybody thought I had to get married. So that was an embarrassment there. I said, no, I tell you, I did not have to get married, you know. And so when June passed by, and I still didn't have the baby, but I was still just as big as I was at 3 months, you know, I had our first son, Scott, and we went. Everything was pretty cool still. We were doing our weekend warrior drinking, you know, and I was still water skiing in the summertime and working third shift and, you know, the whole rigmarole. I'd go to work on Sunday and get off work and at 7 in the morning go water skiing and go back to work Monday night, you know, and it was like the drinking. It was a whole weird routine there for a while. And then about a year and a half, 2 years later, I guess it was about 2 years later, I was pregnant again. The only thing is, my problem was every time we went to a wedding, something went wrong. Because 9 months later, after every wedding I went to, we had a kid. And I just know it was something to do with whatever we did at that wedding, because it's just not happening. You know, I knew I wasn't doing anything. You know, of course, I never remembered leaving any of the weddings, you know, so how would I ever remember getting pregnant in the first place, you know? So after our third child, I think Tom had about it with kids, you know, and we were starting to drift apart. Mostly, he'd be drinking and he wouldn't come home, and I'd be mad, so I'd be drinking at home and be really mad when he got home, you know. One time we got in an argument. It was kind of hilarious. We were fighting, and he said something to me, and I smacked him like that, and he slipped and hit the Rice Krispies and fell because of the Rice Krispies all over the floor, and neighbors called cops. So the cops come, and he's in there sweeping up the Rice Krispies, and he says, "Looks like you have everything under control." I said, "Yeah, he's drunk, you know." Both of us were drunk. He just happened to get the Rice Krispies, that's all. And so it was like a not exactly the place to be for a married couple in that sense of the word. We were drifting apart, arguing over stuff, and it was hard keeping babysitters. We came home one time. I have three sons, mind you. We come home from work one night, finally, I should say, and the babysitter was tied in a chair. And I says, "What happened?" And she says, "Well, we were playing cowboys and Indians, and I was the cowboy." And I says, "Well, you know better than to let the kids do this to you." Well, you know, of course. Well, she never came back, so I, you know. And then she was just a teenager, you know, so she was... I thought, oh my gosh, I can't do this anymore. So I quit working at GE, and I decided to be a stay-at-home mom. Well, you know what? Stay-at-home moms that drink is not a good idea, you know, because I'd drink all day when the kids were at school. By the time their dad got home from work, I'm blasted. The kids are, you know, on their own more or less. You know, it was totally a mess. So we ended up getting a divorce. Which we got divorced in 75. And Timmy and Tommy, my two youngest boys, were asthmatic, very asthmatic. And they would get sick any time the weather would change. They would be sick or go to the hospital, whatever. So the doctor suggested that we take them to a dry climate, you know. So Tom says, "Well, maybe if we move away from here and we go to a drier climate, we're not going to know anybody, so everything will work out. It'll be better, you know." Well, we did the geographical move, you know. And we got back together. And we were together probably 3-4 years without too much problem. Then I started working at a bar. Oh, dear. Anyway, I was a bartender at two different places, one beer bar and a club, you know. So the beer bar was fine. It was, you know, just a beer bar. And my boys would come down there and shoot pool while I was working, you know, and whatever. And I'd get drunk behind the bar, you know, a perfect place for an alcoholic. And then when I worked at the club, which is American Legion, you know, so that's a family thing, so my kids could go there while I worked, and that worked out real well. So I didn't need a babysitter because actually all the customers were the babysitters, you know. It worked out real well. You know, I drank, got to be out of the house, and had a babysitter all at once. You know, ideal job for an alcoholic, ideal. Well, after, you know, a couple of years of that baloney, my husband couldn't take it anymore, so we separated again. At this point, I'm on my own. And the boys are, my oldest boy is in the Air Force by then, and Tim's graduating from high school, and Tommy's ready to graduate from high school. And I was bartending, so it was okay. The kids were on their own, more or less. You know, they didn't get too much trouble, knock on wood, considering their mother was never there. She was at the bar all the time, 24/7, you know. If I wasn't working, I was sitting there drinking or shooting pool or something. Anything. I guess about Tommy graduated in 92, and that's when he moved away. All my kids at this point had moved away, and it's just me by myself. I owned my own home. I paid cash for it, so I had my own home. And I got fired from my bartending job. And so I ended up collecting unemployment, which was like $56 every 2 weeks or $78 every 2 weeks. Well, my taxes and my lot rent alone, you know, utilities and lot rent on my trailer were like $300 and some a month. And I'm getting like $78 a month. Well, I lost my home. So at that point, I was out. I was out in the street. California, it's easy to live on the street. I lived there for 2 years. And there was like four of us that were homeless, and we were good friends. Matter of fact, I haven't heard from them in a while. I might have to send them a note and hope they get it, you know. But what we did was we found an old abandoned house, and each of us had little jobs where we could make a few bucks here and there, you know. And I worked at an antique shop, so I could go there, be off the street all day long. At nighttime was the only time I had to find a place to sleep. And we found this old abandoned house, and we fixed it up. And the landlord, the person that owned the house, had abandoned it. Well, once they seen it was being fixed up and everything, he'd come back into the picture, you know. But as long as we kept the house in good appearance, where it didn't look abandoned and was taken care of, we were allowed to live there rent-free. So we lived there. There was four of us. And what we would do is go dumpster diving, which everybody, well, I was the queen of the dumpster divers, you know. There was me and one other girl and three guys. And what the guys would do is, because I was small, I could get in the dumpster. So they would put me in the dumpster, and I would hand the good food out to them. And believe me, you'd be surprised at how much good food is how much good food is thrown away at these stores, the grocery stores, you know, because the date is like tomorrow's date, they throw it out, you know. And we had better meat than if I went to the grocery store and bought it, you know. And we would fix this food for all the homeless people. And in trade, what they would do is if we needed lawn mowed, somebody would get a mower and mow the lawn. Or windows needed work. Or if you needed stuff done around the house, you'd do that, we'd feed you. You know. And we did that for 2 years. And that was rewarding. I was still drinking, but it maybe not as badly as I did before I got thrown out of my house because I could afford it. You know, now I couldn't, you know. So what money I made helped with the electric and gas for this house. And I would buy my beer or whatever, cigarettes, because I smoked at the time. And we would go. What was nice is some of the grocery stores would, they knew what we were doing, and they would set aside the good foods, the fruits and vegetables and the good meats and that on a thing, because they knew what time we'd be coming through. Because if the cops caught you, you'd automatically be arrested for loitering, stealing, you know. So they would set it aside for us. And it was nice of them to do that. Not very many of the stores did that. We had a couple of them that were really nice and did that. So anyway, finally I decided that I'd had it. I went and turned myself into rehab to get sober. You know, I had talked with a couple people on the street that were in the program, and they had told me where to go, so I went, and I went to a rehab. Well, I'll tell you what, that was something else. For me, it was strange because it was all addicts, and I was the only alcoholic. I did not understand what was going on. So, in a sense, it was kind of like a learning experience for me. I learned a lot about drugs and had no clue that I was an alcoholic because that's not what I was learning about, you know. So when I left there, I ran away from there. My son, Timothy, sent me a bus ticket from California to here. I moved from California to Pennsylvania by bus. And I got here and I came to work, got a job as soon as I got here, working at Snaptite. And I worked there, and I just retired from there. I had 16 years. I went to work there. Now, at that point, I was sober. I hadn't been drinking or anything like that. I met a really wonderful guy, and I dated him for 4 years, and he died of cancer. And whatever happened, I don't know. I went off the deep end, you know, and I started drinking again. And I got worse. I was 10 times worse than I ever was in my life. I mean, I got where I was. In order to get out of bed in the morning, I had to have a drink. I couldn't get up in the morning. I'd be throwing up. I was just a mess, you know. And I was going to work, and finally my boss, he says to me, "Lida, you need help." I says, "I know, but I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do." And they said, "Well, if we send you to rehab, would you go?" And I said, "Yeah." Well, that barely got out of my mouth. I was in rehab. I didn't know what happened. I said, "Oh, my God, what did I do?" You know, and so here I am. I went to detox at Mill Creek, and I was there for 3 days, and they sent me to Glen Bay. Greatest thing that happened. It was the most wonderful learning about AA experience, and learning that I was an alcoholic, a full-blown alcoholic. My kids drove me there, and I'll tell you, I couldn't believe that I was an alcoholic at first. It had to be a mistake, you know. You know, I just drink more than I should, you know. But after a while, and listening to people, and oh my God, I knew there was no doubt about it. I was an alcoholic, you know, a lot of times, even to this day, I say, why couldn't I have just been a normal person like everyone else? Why couldn't I go out and have fun, and drink, and go home? You don't know, I'd go out, get drunk, and if I went home, it was a miracle, you know. And luckily, you know, I had 3 sons, and they all turned out really good. They could have turned out to be juvenile delinquents. Good God, I don't know. I dread the thought, you know. But I've been very fortunate that they're wonderful. But, you know, in the process of getting here to this program, I lost grandchildren. You know, I was never allowed to see them. And to last year, Christmas time, my one grandson is 23 years old. It's the first time I've seen him since he was 6 years old. It was wonderful. My 21-year-old granddaughter, I hadn't seen her since she was 9 years old. She was there at Christmas time. I got to see all my grandchildren, finally. And it took 11 years of sobriety to do it. You know, it's amazing what this program has done. Now, I could tell you one thing. Right now in this room, I have 5 generations. My sponsor, the girl I sponsored has cancer right now, so she's not here tonight, and we all pray for her. And the girl she sponsors, Linnea and Helen, were 6 generations, actually. And to me, that's something to brag about. That's something great. Jim last week with his family, his AA family. That is so wonderful, and it's amazing how you get so many friends in this program. Now, I'm a fond believer in service work. You know, I do as much as I can. I worked on the conference committee. I'm going to go back to it. I enjoyed that, so I'm going back now that I'm retired. And I worked on the Women's Retreat Committee and meetings. And I try to sponsor. I try to help in any way I can. And I'm very lucky that I have a sponsor I could talk to, and a brand sponsor I adore, you know. And terrific friends, you know, in the program. And if it wasn't for this program, I wouldn't have all this that I have today. You know, I have 2 great-grandchildren, you know, 15 grandchildren, and my 3 sons, you know, and they all love me, and they worship the ground I walk on. I have 1 grandson that has been a little AA prodigy, you know. He's 12. He'll be 13 in May. And he's been coming to this program since I've been in it. And when he was about 5, 6 years old, I guess, his mom called me up, and she says, "Lyda, are you going to a meeting?" And I said, "Yes." I said, "Why?" And she says, "Well, your grandson needs a meeting." And I says, I said, "What?" He says, "Yeah, he got me up this morning. He says, 'Mom, I need a meeting.'" And I said, "You know," and he was like 6 or 7 years old. But, you know, he knew if something was troubling him, you go to a meeting and you'll feel better, because it worked for me, so it's got to work for him, you know. And it just made me feel good that this program has rubbed off on him, you know. And it's really nice. I'd like to thank everybody tonight, especially, for making this meeting the meeting it is. It's 11 years old, and, you know, it was a baby. It's been a baby for a long time. But it's a wonderful, wonderful little meeting. And you guys are just terrific, and I love all of you. Thanks for being here for me. Thank you.